Hello, fellow travelers, and welcome to the First in Stars podcast. Today's special guests are Dan Dismore and Daniel Neat. You know them best as the Clay People. On this episode, they discuss their album Demon Hero and other extraordinary phantasmagoric anomalies and fables, and their upcoming album Cult Hypnotica. And a special treat for our listeners, at the end of this interview, you can listen to two songs from their new album. Now come join me as we go traversing the stars. Hello, Mr. Neat and Mr. Dinsmore. Thank you so much for coming to the First in Stars podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Oh, it's definitely my pleasure. Can you hear me, Mr. Dinsmore?
Yes.
All right. Fantastic. Like I said, I'm a big fan of your music, so it's a big deal to have you on my show. So thank you so much.
Great. Thank you.
So I always ask a question of inspiration first. So for both of you, where does your love of music stem from and who were your earliest influences?
All right, Danny, go first.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks. I guess my love of music started, my father had passed away when I was 12, and I needed a really strong outlet. I was into some sports and stuff, but drums was something I could kind of, you know, go into my own world. And I started out, you know, just playing to records. Everything from the Jackson 5 to Jimi Hendrix to Led Zeppelin, Cream. You know, then I started to get into like some old Buddy Rich stuff and Louis Belson, and all through the 70s and 80s, you know, it moved on into things like Jane's Addiction and ending up with bands like Tool and that type of thing. So I think it was an escapism to begin with. And my personal roots came from, like, you know, going back to looking at Motown was a huge influence on me. And then moving into, you know, metal and all that fun stuff.
So those are some classic bands you named. Every band you named was like, that's a damn good one right there.
Agree with the Jackson 5?
Actually, I do have some of them, your music on my iTunes. ABC, I must admit, is on the radio from time to time going into work.
Excellent. Perfect.
I have Jackson 5 in rotation also. Pretty eclectic music taste. Are you good, Dan? Can I jump in? You good?
Yeah, of course.
You're talking about when we started our love of music. Mine goes, I go back to probably like junior high, like sixth, seventh grade. I ended up like acquiring a bunch of 45s from my cousin. It was like Mott the Hoople and David Bowie. I eventually ended up like finding love for Zeppelin and the Kinks, and that from there I went to, you know, the Clash. I was looking for like music from like my generation, because it seemed like, you know, we were force fed a lot of 60s classics as kids, and there's nothing wrong with that. That was great. The rebellious side of me started coming out, so I just started falling into, you know, faster, angrier kind of music, I guess. So I can't say like the Clash is really like angry, but I guess it's somewhat maybe passive aggressively angry music. I found myself like Alice Cooper to the Clash to like the Cure, and then it would be Skinny Puppy somewhere in there, you know. I always had my first album I ever bought was Yes, Fragile. The third album I acquired that I happened to get was Led Zeppelin. So there's always been a love for machines and electronics, and just kind of like straightforward, like fun, dirty rock music. So that's where I kind of went. And then of course I just get way into, you know, like Ministry and Skinny Puppy and Nitzareb, Die Warsaw, things like that. And then, of course, you know, my love for, you know, punk and metal. I actually, at one point, wasn't really, I find myself in a metal band, but I don't know necessarily that I was a big metal fan until I started actually creating it with the rest of these guys.
I think that's really interesting. Yeah. So what you're saying is you didn't search out to become a metal band. It just kind of evolved from you guys. Because in my research for you guys, you guys have been described as alternative rock, post-grunge, industrial metal. Did these things, were they chosen, like, I'm going to go in this direction, or did that direction just kind of find itself as the music kind of developed?
Yeah, it was a really eclectic mix of people with very diverse musical backgrounds and musical taste. It still is. So, you know, I remember going in and one of the first times we played as a band together and leaving, and I was like, I have no idea what that was. there was like a dance, you know, metal, heavy, electronic, industrial, punk. It was just a culmination of all these different types of personalities, different types of people with different backgrounds and musically. And it just, I think that was part of the magic that came together for the band. I think that's one of the reasonings behind it, is the different, approaches.
Yeah, we're like big fans of just, you know, letting the songs evolve naturally, you know, and whatever. There's no distaste in any kind of style with us. We have a sound, there's no doubt about it. You know, no matter what we try, it's still going to sound like us. But we're not afraid. We're just unafraid to try different things constantly, looking to write the best song or the best song that we can make at that moment. But there's been never any issues with styles. And I don't think we definitely don't gravitate towards doing a certain type of sound. It's just what comes out naturally.
I mean, I think your music, your band's music has evolved quite a bit over the last, almost 30 years of music. Has there ever been a fear of, as you have adapted, that listeners or fans wouldn't follow you to whatever new thing that you're making? Is that ever been something that's been creatively?
You know, that's a really good question. But what it comes down to is that we really enjoy being the Clay People and writing Clay People music. And you can't fake it. You can't go up there and pretend that you like doing what you're doing. If you don't like what you're doing, you can't dumb down your audience. They're going to know. But we like doing what we do. We have really very energetic, fun live shows, and that translates really well to the people that follow the band. So it doesn't matter what we do, because it's still us, you know. And if it has a little bit of this or a little bit of that in there, it has a metal riff going with a Jackson 5 disco beat, well, so be it. It's still us. So I guess when it comes to that, we believe in what we do. We have a lot of fun doing it. And we said, if it gets to the point where the band isn't fun anymore, then we shouldn't be doing it. But
I definitely think that, like, halfway through the band's career, I think there might have been more concern, maybe a little bit of, like, hey, are people going to dig this or are they not going to dig it? And I think, we've evolved to such a point where, do we like this? It's not that we don't care. We want people to enjoy the music. We want to touch people, and I think the evolution is obviously musical, but also the evolution, I think, from a lyrical standpoint, has been immense. From what I've seen, is a transition from the self-titled debut, which wasn't the actual debut record, but the self-titled, to now. I just think there's been a lot of life lived and a lot of experience and a lot of crafting lyrically Dan's done that. I think it's raised the bar, in my opinion, especially on this new record. I think he's really come into a place that's you know, really brutally honest and real, you know, and kind of using the kitschiness of the Clay People fun in a really interesting and smart way, you know? So I think it's something that, you know, we're pretty proud of is this, the latest material that we've been working on.
So as you're... as you're conceptualizing or developing your new album, we'll go into the new one just in just a moment, your newest one. Are you guys conceptualizing a theme for the album first, or do you create the music first and then kind of determine which songs flow best together? So is it...
It's all relative, Jeff. Yeah, it's all relative to where we are individually at the moment. There's really no preconceived ideas. We just start writing. Brian McGarvey, who isn't here, but our guitarist in the band, he has this just unending plethora of ideas that constantly are sent to us. Like, it's overloading at times. He is always creating and writing. And I guess, you know, we just kind of grab onto like what we like or what we bring in or we're at, but there's no preconceived ideas. It's just relative to where we are at that moment, you know, when we're writing the song. But there is a theme, you know, after the record's done, or this particular record's done, this case, and of course, there's a lot more to come still. We ended up demoing almost 40 tracks for this record, and then Joe brought it down. Like you said, we got it down to about 12. But they're definitely a theme for the record kind of surfaced on its own. And so there is a continuity to the entire record, and there, you know, there is something said, and then the songs, you know, they naturally just kind of go together because that's how we're writing at that moment.
So your most recent album is called, and I love the title, Demon Hero and Other Extraordinary Phantasmagoric Anomalies and Fables, which is a extraordinary title. I mean, that's one of those titles that is just, and if, I mean, honestly, I mean, I love the album, but even if the music wasn't good, the album's just fun to say the title for it, just to have it, because it's such a wonderful title. So where did the idea for this title come from and the album, and how did you just determine which songs best met the content for this album?
For the last record, it was Brian that had said it. We were all kind of demonized in our lives in a way. The anti-hero is something that we obviously relate with. The long title, honestly, is most likely, I don't know if this is true or not. I can't quite remember, but I would probably guess that we couldn't really agree on a title, you know, and everybody had a lot of ideas and it just morphed into that. I've always been a big fan of super long titles. We've never done that before. So I definitely gravitated towards that idea and liked it. But, you know, we even call the album Demon Hero. I have to say, it took me a minute to learn the title. After we put it out. There's a lot of big college words in there. You know, you have to really go through those syllables and get it down right. But it, you know, it's, I went through, and it's not just me, every band member went through some very traumatic, you know, issues in our lives. And I went through a really huge transitional period. And I survived it, and I'm here today because of it. And that album was done while I was going through that transition. But when the album came out, I kind of peeked my head out of this cloud of absolute mess that I was in mentally. And, you know, the guy's sticking with me. I don't know why. But these guys really just really helped me through a very major, major destructive time in my life that I came out of. So that was part of the reason for the title. And of course, it's within the songs, like I said before, everything's relative lyrically. It explains, you can hear like the anger and my cries for help basically throughout the entire record. We're, you know, very transparent. And even more now so, and you know, more transparent that we become, the band is, and myself, and lyrically, it just has a good reflection of who we are as people. It's always trying to learn more and be a better person. And it's tough. It's tough to be a better person because we're human.
Yeah.
You know, and the human condition is constantly, you know, testing us.
It's harder for some of us than others.
Yes, to like, yes, to like soften up my serious moment here.
I think it's interesting because I think a lot of fans of music, the music itself is therapeutic for the fans. I don't know if fans always realize how therapeutic music is for those creating the music. And when you guys are thinking about the music itself, is it something that is like an urge, like a creative or therapeutic urge for you guys to make new music? Or is it, you know, the enjoyment of it is a byproduct? The enjoyment is the thing, and then the therapeutic aspect is the byproduct of having the music made.
Again, it's all relative. You know, the more active we are, the better we are mentally. You know, you have to have an outlet. You have to have that creative outlet. We need it. I know we need it.
I
know
it's both, really.
Because we didn't have it.
I think it's both. Like from a therapeutic standpoint, you know, you know, transcending into a different place is, you know, during the recordings, you know, when you're actually creating the music, like on this new record, you know, we had just went into COVID lockdown, you know, spent 2 years recording tracks. That was probably the only outlet, you know, going out into the world, really. It was to go down to the studio every, you know, twice a week and then be working on music. And at that time, I don't think we really knew, you know, that is extremely therapeutic. At least it is for me. And I know it is for some of the other guys in the band. But I think when you talk about the product, you know, and you start looking at that, as this record came together and as, the, you know, it is extremely therapeutic, you know, to be able to like step back and go, whoa, especially on this record, which is a little interesting, is that we didn't go into it with this current events or state of the world mentality at all, you know. But where it ended up was like so dead on with everything that's happening right now. And you know, I think this record is definitely a larger statement than anything we've ever done before. Well, maybe not from Dan's last record. I think that was a very personal approach.
That was this one definitely has hooked into the collective unconscious. You know, for me, it was the polarization. In the beginning, it was the polarization of social media and politics that really started upsetting me, because you have friends for years that, I mean, it gets to the point where you can't go on social media. It's just absolutely toxic. And that was in the beginning that started to come through. And then it just, you know, like Dan said, you're looking back on it, it's like we just really tapped into something. And I'm not even sure we were aware of it.
I don't think we even were aware of it at that time. And then when you listen, and I started digging in this past week and like analyzing word by word, you know, like in Cult Hypnotic, you know, it's pretty intense, you know, as far as what we're saying here, you know, and like Dan was saying, it is toxic, you know, media, you know, what the next generation's going to be dealing with from a, you know, an attention span, you know, looking at what kind of information is being misread or intentionally, you know, leading you down wrong paths.
Right.
So I think it's, you know, definitely a heavy statement, you know, on this record. It's pretty powerful. It's definitely a therapy for all of us, I believe.
it's our responsibility as artists too. It's, you know, when things need to be pointed out, it comes from the art world first, you know, and, you know, we have to make, we don't have to, but making these observations is just, you know, it shows that we have a conscience and we have, you know, empathy. And, you know, when things aren't, somebody has to say something at some point. And, you know, it happened on this album, and, you know, it's filled with a lot of metaphors, you know, throughout the lyrics. But some of it is just, it's pretty straight up. The message is pretty straight up, you know? And when you get a chance to listen, you'll probably hear it, that the Cult Hypnotic is basically based on, or Cult Hypnotic is one of the tracks. Cult Hypnotica is the record, which encompasses all this propaganda pretty much that's force fed to us on a daily basis from all different avenues. And it's kind of like picking through that mess and trying to figure out where the transparency is, you know, and then digesting it and making the right decisions in our lives at that moment. And that, I feel, came through, you know, especially on this record. I mean, I don't know if we could keep continuing to be like the angriest band in the world, but we definitely have some issues with things.
I mean, the thing about, obviously, with social media, especially nowadays, is that on both sides, the pitchforks come out very quickly, and they're very sharp. When you're making music that kind of questions it or points towards it, is there a concern at all of blowback in that way? I mean, or is it a sign of confidence that you no longer concern yourself with, maybe, or maybe you never did concern yourself with, let's say the social media pitchforks?
You know, art is about, you know, provoking some kind of response, you know, and, you know, good art, bad art, but, you know, when we do that, you know, it makes people think, you know, and it makes us think too, you know, and it's a mature level for us as musicians at this point. You know, if there's a backlash, it's only because the message is about observation, you know, between what goes on, you know, from nature and nurture, from what's outside of us, from what's inside of us, and then us kind of taking that and, you know, making proper decisions, you know, life decisions. So, you know, anything we can, provoking a response, you know, from anyone, good or bad, we're not telling you anything. We're not saying anything that you don't know already. You know, we're just part of that large collective unconscious that's saying everything that the things that people are thinking. And if they're not thinking, then, you know, we're going to say it enough to get someone thinking, maybe, you know. And I'm not looking to change the world. Like I said, this is the human condition. And we're just the purveyors of continuing an outward narrative and getting a dialogue with people. You know, and meanwhile, we're going to put in some heavy riffs and a lot of fun dance, you know, cool dance beats, and, you know, where we can all come together, you know, especially at the Clay People live shows, and have fun. You know, it's like all the misfits, all the introverts, and all the rejected can come and hang out with us. Always welcome in our camp.
Would it be troubling, or would you say that music shouldn't ever be safe? Like, if you ever felt you're starting to write in a way that would be considered safe, would that be a warning sign for you to either reevaluate or back off?
We fell into, we climbed the Billboard charts at the end of the 90s, you know, and that really caused a lot of problems with us, because we started chasing that. We started chasing that radio recognition, and, you know, it happened, and it's great that it happened. But that it caused that's the safe way to play music, is to write to a formula in a bubblegum G chord way, let's say, that everybody can enjoy, that doesn't necessarily represent us. You know, we can only do what we do, and we try to do what we do the best.
Is that addictive? You said like the Billboard charts and chasing, I guess, mainstream popularity. Is there an addictive nature to that that's hard to let go?
It's trying to stay viable, you know. But I realize, like, we've been around for so long, we don't really have to try to stay viable. You know, we've just been around. We're just here. You know, we're like a bad penny. We can turn it up.
No, it's not. I don't think, you know, I think back in the day when Dan was saying, you know, and I think when we were recording this record, Waking the Dead, you know, I think we were looking at, we might have felt a little bit of that, but this band is never really, it never really came across to me as like radio viable to begin with.
No.
You know,
no.
Like, so, no. You know, because we don't really fit into these, you know, genres. And even now, you know, you know, it's kind of hard to pinpoint it. You know, there's punk, there's metal, there's industrial, there's dance, there's electronic, there's alternative, there's whatever you said, you know, post grunge, whatever that is, you know, like, so it's just this culmination of stuff. But I think now it's just about writing and being true, you know, to what we're doing and just trying to make the best art that we can, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now one song I want to definitely focus in on. There's a song of yours called Colossus, which is an extraordinary song. I really like it. And also, it's very, I'm thinking how to define that song, because there's definitely a fantastical aspect to the music, especially when you look at the album. Some of the other songs, like my own Utopian Life, and the others that seem way more personal, this one definitely has a fantastical aspect to it. What inspired the creation of Colossus?
Colossus is based on something bigger than yourself. You know, I could give the dumbed down version of it, but you know, when you are surrounded by something so extraordinary, basically, as it says in the lyrics, it's beyond you. It's like otherworldly almost. It's massive. And you know, and massive is frightening for people. It's frightening for me. You know, if I start getting into the thoughts of space and infinity and how there's no end to infinity, and my tiny little brain cannot handle that concept. But, you know, I'm a big comic book fan. I've been since I was a kid. And it's basically imagining you on your everyday life, and then up in the air is like something super powerful happening that's so beyond you, it's hard to comprehend. But it, again, you know, I guess, you know, when it comes to, I mean, we all have a superpower in our own way, and we don't realize the gravity of having our own little superpowers, you know, because it's very hard to have a conception of that. So it's about, the song is about something bigger than ourselves, and then trying to wrap our brain around something bigger than ourselves, you know, and you know, in this case, it's you know, like a whole world at the moment is in fear of a third world war. Yeah. You know, just to put it in today's terms, it's so bigger than us that we have a hard time wrapping our head around it. Yet, you know, people in Ukraine are like us. They would get up every day, maybe go to the bodega, get a cup of coffee, you know, hang out, you know, in their local, you know, coffee shop on the web. And, you know, and the next day they're hiding in their basements, you know, not knowing where their next meal is coming from or where they're going to get a fresh glass of water. It's so beyond us. And it's hard to wrap our heads around it, because in the end, you know, our whole entire lives are ruled by a handful of people that we don't know personally and we have to trust in. And
it is a lot. And then Top Cow Comics and Epitome Studios took that and they blew that out into their own version of that based upon those premises.
Now, it's a graphic, it's basically a one-shot comic book being written by Matt Hawkins from Top Cow. What was it about Colossus that you said, of all your songs, this is going to be a comic book? This one song, this is what we're doing.
Well, yeah, it wasn't us. So,
That's not true. Danny had a vision for the video. And Danny's vision for the video for the song is what attracted Epitome and then Top Cow to the track. We have very visual lyrics. You know, Danny grabbed onto that first, and then they grabbed onto that afterwards. So, but we didn't stifle the process at all. Mm. We didn't stand over them and say, you have to do it this way. We wanted them to
They might be doing another, and they're definitely doing a video game. And they're talking about pitching it to Blumhouse. So we'll see where it goes from there.
So yeah. Colossus, which was a one issue book, is that, so it's going to be a second, third? I mean, are you guys going to
do these? We don't know. It's possible. It did really well, you know, initially. It's only been like, I don't know, 20 days or something, but they sold out. So I know they're going to do a second pressing, I believe. And but they have been talking, you know, but until it happens, it happens. But it was well received as a comic, you know, in the comic book world. So
are there other songs of yours that are gonna be turned into comic books then?
Oh, there's plenty.
There's plenty.
There's all kinds. Like we have a song called My Exploding.
We got
Head.
Six comics.
I think it would be a great
that'd be I would read them all.
I'm happy that we have a comic book that's, you know, that we're part of.
Mm. Yeah, and that was successful. You know, we've been on movie soundtracks that was very exciting to be a part of, but they didn't really do much, you know. And for this book to sell out in a time where people really aren't buying tangible items, you know, it seems everything is media based, social media platform based,
digital.
Digital. Thanks, Danny. Yeah, he's got to bring me back down to earth once in a while.
I'm always there for you, Dan.
If you've noticed, as we've done the interview,
got your back.
Reel him back in.
As fans of comic books and your creators yourselves, will you then at some point make your own comic book direct completely on your own and be the writer?
That's not us. Again, getting back
to write music,
we can only do what we do well. We're not comic book.
Yeah, but we are doing some like interactive media stuff with it, you know, some motion design stuff. So, you know, we got a lot of the original artwork that we're putting together, like a follow-up video. We had a remix just done by this guy Danny Saber of Colossus, and we're going to be utilizing some of the assets from the comic and the artist. We're going to release that, you know, and then we'll see where it goes from there. You know, we're really excited about, you know, if there is a second version, you know, we'll see what happens. But right now, you know, we're enjoying this one and seeing where this whole Colossus thing is going to go.
So yeah, very grateful for this.
Yeah.
We've been working
on this, you know, getting this new record out, but you know, that drops on July 1st.
Ooh, and that's Cult Hypnotica, correct? Am I getting the title correctly?
Cult Hypnotica, yep. And the song Cult Hypnotic is going to radio next week or
very
this week.
Cool.
I'm not sure. Yeah, very soon.
I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, no, it's we're pretty pumped up about it.
Yes.
You know? I think it's a good, you know, we'd love to get your feedback and your listeners' feedback from it. But I think, you know, Demon Hero had a sound to it. And then there was self-titled that was, you know, very rambunctious. I think it's the most eclectic mix of Clay People that I've, you know, been a part of in a really long time, you know, where we're bringing a lot of different things forward. I think it's really good. I think people will enjoy this record.
Well,
sure.
If possible, after the interview, we could always have a sample of your song right at the end. I'd be more than happy to post it up there so people can listen at least to a preview of the song. So that's
Danny is the boss. You have to ask the boss.
I will certainly ask the boss on that one.
I think your email's in the Zoom invite, right? So I can shoot you a link to a couple tracks that you can check out.
That'd be fantastic.
The Colossus video too. At least the old Colossus video would be great. Maybe a new track or something. I don't know if you've seen the original video for Colossus. But...
Well, like I said, the Colossus is definitely, that may be one of my favorite songs. I did get the chance to talk to Mr. Hawkins, and it's a great comic book as well. So fantastic for both of you guys.
Chris and Matt did a great job on the book. We couldn't be more happy. And I just wanted to put that shout out really quick because Top Cow's been fantastic, interpreting our art and making their art from our art. Very grateful that they
and a talented, extremely talented writer. I mean, yeah. Just going through that process with them and with him. And how he dug in, you know, is very similar to like dealing with like, as you know, Dan Neat writing lyric, you know, it was a similar experience with Matt when he was writing, you know, and how personal it is, which I'm sure we can talk to you a little bit about, you know, and the topics that it touches on and that it is part of him as well. And I think that's really super cool, like that. This comic isn't just, you know, fictitious. There's elements of reality that are brought into it from the writers and the producers and the people that put it together. It's a very interesting, cool piece of art.
Because you can only write what you know, from your experience. And that's, again, being transparent with your audience. And, you know, when they interpret that, you know, like every rumor comes from something. There's some truth to everything that's said.
Well, Mr. Neat, Mr. Dinsmore, it was a pleasure to talk with you about all things the Clay People. It was fantastic, and I hope my listeners definitely check out Colossus from Top Cow and the new album Cult of Hypnotica. So thank you so much for joining the show,
Jeff. Thanks. Haas, thank Jeff, you,
my pleasure.
Take care.
Peace out.
Now, fellow travelers, it is time to hear the Clay People's new song Cult Hypnotic off their new album Cult Hypnotica.
This world feels killed. Fame, power, love, and money fabricated.
And now, fellow travelers, the Clay People's second song off their album, Cult Hypnotica, here comes The Drugs Are Not Working. Enjoy.
Where's the love, man?